Hi, and welcome to the Wonderful World of Disney Villains podcast. I'm your host, Katie, ready to talk about everything Disney. Hello, 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 and welcome back. This episode is part two of a two-part episode about adoption, parent-child family tropes, and Disney's theme of directing characters back to their birth families. If you haven't listened to part one yet, I recommend doing so, but it's also not required. You do you. In this part two episode, my guest Lauren and I are talking about adoption narratives in cinema and the popular trope of protagonists being adopted, orphaned, discovering they have a secret birth story, and more. As mentioned in the previous episode, Lauren and I are both adopted, and we literally could not stop talking about this topic. This is a two-part episode series where we talked for almost 3 hours about this, and we barely scratched the surface, so there's a lot to talk about regarding this topic, and not a lot of people are doing it. I don't know why. So sit back, relax, and listen as we talk about film, TV, and musical storytelling and how it portrays the adoption narrative.
Something that this made me think of was the movie Onward.
I haven't seen it, but I've heard about it.
Okay.
I don't know, based on what I've heard, if I can sit through that movie.
Oh, okay. So I'm just thinking of the end, and I guess if you'll let me spoil it, I will say what
she doesn't get to see his dad, right?
Right.
That thing is so... I couldn't believe that when I read the summary. I was like, what?
Oh, okay. So
I didn't know that.
Something that I liked was throughout this entire journey of him trying to find his biological dad and meet him for the first time, he realizes that his brother is kind of like his dad, or like the dad that he wanted in his life.
I don't know if that's a good look either.
But like, the thing for me was he was willing to give up the idea of meeting his dad, someone he had never met and he didn't even know if he would like, because he has his brother and he knows who his brother is. So he gave up his option to see his dad so that his brother could meet his dad again, because his brother had grown up with dad.
So complicated.
And, you know, gone through that loss, whereas, you know, the main character did not meet dad, but still had loss. And being like, you know, I'm actually content with what I've already had my entire life that I took for granted.
Oh.
So there are things about that kind of trope that I do and don't like. Yeah. But also, it was just weird that it was like, why... I mean, he was in a fight sequence, but it was kind of like, why did it have to be put in a situation where he had to make a choice where only one of them could see?
And that he chose the life he had, too.
Right. Yeah, the life he already has.
And I feel like that's complicated, too.
Yeah, I like the trope that you don't have to know who your biological parent is, in that idea that life is okay without knowing.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, you know, he lives with his biological mother. But yeah, it was just an interesting, still emotional. And I mean, I like watching Tom Holland movies. I think he's really good at so that's just me. But, well, actually, you know, Chris is really good at those too. There are good and bad things, but I thought that was one of my more favorable, like, let's not meet our birth parents, even though we wanted to, and be okay with it.
Mm-hmm. So I do like the fact that the character is presented with agency,
mm-hmm,
to make their own choice. However, I don't like the fact that he chooses. To me, I think adoptive parents, there's a risk that adoptive parents walk away seeing that and being like, oh, my adoptee will choose me.
Or not choose me.
Yeah, or the adoptee chooses the life that they already had and that life is enough, so I don't have to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
To foster or help facilitate a relationship with my adoptee's birth family, I feel like it sends a really problematic message.
Mm.
And I think that they probably could have approached that thing differently, because I feel like the choice is his, but not really.
And they weren't looking at it from an adoption lens, which I, mm-hmm, think is, because this movie is literally, was it the writer or the director? It's his life story.
Oh,
like,
wow.
This is his.
I did not know.
This is his story, but you add magic to it and you make it mythical creatures, right?
Of course.
It's literally the story of him and his brother.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And how they, you know, grew up without their dad.
Mm-hmm.
So it was more, you know, about that, which I totally get. And in that context, yeah, it's a beautiful story. But when you look at it from an adoption lens, it does change quite a bit. And I think
For
just they
sure, for
weren't looking at it that way, so maybe that's why.
sure.
But also, there are so many other movies that are similar to this where it's very clear that it's an adoptee and it is really problematic.
And I think something that's happened to me coming out of the fog or slowly emerging from the fog has been bearing witness to how pervasive the adoption narrative is throughout media. And I never noticed it before. Like
Yes.
Elf as a Christmas movie. I love Elf.
Yes. I hate the movie.
I think it's hysterical. I think it's so funny. Every time he gets into a fight with that Santa Claus, I laugh. You know, but this year was the first year that I saw Elf through the lens of an adoptee, and I was like, it's horrible. And I didn't notice it. It's like you don't notice it until you do. I never noticed Loki was an adoptee. I didn't really get it. Like when I saw the movie, I was like, oh yeah, this is the story, but I didn't get that he's adopted. You know, what other things? There's so many things
You
where I
mentioned
watch.
Superman.
Yeah, like even on Netflix, there are so many things where I watch and I'm just like, oh my God, this is an adoption narrative. And I totally didn't get it. And now that I'm emerging from the fog, it's impossible to not see. It's impossible to not see, to not be upset by it, to not be triggered by it. Oh, Lady Snowblood. I don't know if you've seen
I've
it.
never seen it.
Is it Lady Snowblood or Lady Vengeance? It's an old kung fu movie. I don't even know if that's the right term, kung fu movie, because it is like heavily based in martial arts. I think it's Lady Vengeance, though. And it's part of that trilogy of Old Man, Old Boy. And it's the same director, and he did a movie of three. But Lady Vengeance is also technically an adoption narrative, I think. I'm trying to remember because I saw Lady Vengeance and Lady Snowblood around the same time. And one of those movies is an adoption narrative or has an adoption component. And I remember my boyfriend wanting me to watch these. And then I noticed the adoption narrative and I was like, this is too much. And he was like, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize that this was part of the movie. Or like he had seen it, but didn't realize how it would affect me. And I was like, it's okay. I can sit through the movie. But I just remember being in shock that there were so many components of adoption narratives. And I know that we talked recently about Once Upon a Time. And I didn't notice how almost every child in that show has an adoption narrative and how problematic the representation of adoptees is on that show. Because I remember every Sunday, me and my mom would sit down in our TV room and we would watch it and we were like hooked, especially that first season. I was like, I can't wait for next week. I can't wait to see what happens. And now rewatching it through the lens of someone who is emerging from the fog, I was just like, this is so problematic. This is so horrible. This is like so irresponsible of like Disney and ABC and just everyone complicit in the show. It's really, really, truly terrible.
Well, because you're also looking at it from the lens of, ooh, I want to see how they make this Disney movie into reality. You're not necessarily looking for those tropes and those, I guess, like slight, like offhanded sentences or reactions or body movements or other. For me, it took a few times. And you and I talking before, I was thinking, what are all the TV shows that I watch over and over again, or that like I go back to and want to rewatch? And they're all shows that have adoption narratives, but it's like in the background of, you know, the greater plot, which is of magic, of fantasy, of, you know, superheroes and other. Like Once Upon a Time was one of those shows that I always rewatched. I really liked the later season dynamic between Regina, Henry, and Emma, and
Oh, yeah,
being the
much
adoptive mother and birth mother, parent co-parenting, but not until like way later on in the series.
I know, and I feel like that came too late, too.
Yeah, for sure. But I get it. I mean, it takes time to, you know, understand and appreciate and acknowledge, you know, like what that dynamic looks like, what that means, how to navigate it. And also, they're both really like strong-headed, aggressive, you know, like
Absolutely.
emotions, you know, hidden and driven with like tons and tons of agency women. And they are both single parents. and there's all these things. And so like I kind of get it. And technically each season is only 6 months. So it's really not that long when you think of it. Henry only ages like maybe 3 years in the entire
Yeah, and
six, seven seasons. It shows, yeah.
there is one season where I'm like, oh, someone had the growth spurt.
Someone had the voice
Someone's
drop.
voice much deeper than it was last season.
And I'm like, and he's only 13? I don't know about that, but okay.
Like Harry Potter, who
Yes.
I never considered to be an adoptee. Like really, when I was watching it, when I was reading it, it never occurred to me that Harry is adopted.
Same.
And I think that's something that we don't speak to enough is I do have a cousin. So my dad is one of 12, and one of his younger brothers,
Oh my God.
after college, went into the Peace Corps and decided to stay in Malaysia. One of my cousins had a baby, and there were some religious differences and cultural differences that forced her, or not forced her, that influenced her relinquishing her rights to her child, her maternal.
Okay. Yeah.
And that child wound up being adopted by another family member.
Okay.
And I think, I don't know how it works in Malaysia. And it's something I've never asked about just because I've never felt comfortable asking about it because I imagine it is painful. But I
Yeah.
don't know that paperwork was signed. I don't know that any like standards or anything or like proper paperwork was executed, you know, to protect that child, to protect the family, to protect my cousin. And that's something that we don't talk about enough because,
Right.
like, with Harry just being left on the Dursleys' doorstep, like, is there a birth certificate? Is there an adoption certificate? Is there like
Right.
any sort of
Legal.
paperwork that protects this child? I know it's a movie, but it's like, oh, well, he's just my sister's kid, so like we don't have to do that.
Right. And it's also in Europe. We don't know how, European rules and laws
Right,
would work.
right. And I think that's something that we don't talk about enough. The transparency, the accuracy and documentation, the validity of documents, all that stuff, while it doesn't seem important to the narrative of like Harry Potter, it is going to be important to Harry
Right.
as a person, as an adoptee, it's going to be important. Because even when he's asking for permission to go to Hogsmeade, he needs a parent or guardian to sign
Right.
it.
Signature.
So are they his legal parents or his legal guardians? Like, what is the distinction there? And how
That's
does that
true.
affect how Harry sees himself in the
Yeah.
context of this family dynamic?
That's true. That and he didn't take their last name
Right.
and when Sirius Black asks him, "Can I adopt you?" and what does that mean? Like, does he have to go to the Dursleys and like file paperwork that changes guardianship, or what does that even look like?
What does it look like in terms of like a wizard adopting,
A muggle, yeah,
yeah,
or
like
other.
the muggle world? Like, how does that transcend? Like, I think these are important questions. They say that art reflects life, right? But if art's truly going to reflect life, it needs to reflect lives authentically. And
Yes.
that means having a segment of your show dedicated to paperwork. Because how many adoptees are now facing deportation or have to fight for citizenship
Yes.
because their parents didn't ensure that the
Accurately.
paperwork was completed accurately and submitted to the proper agencies and that the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed, And now those children who are now adults are reckoning
Yes.
with the shortcomings of their parents, if not right. And it's something that is real. So instead of having these movies like The Blind Side,
Oh, yes.
like instead of having these movies, maybe let's have movies that really show what the adoptee experience can be like and using those movies as a means to raise awareness and fight for change and reform.
Yes. Because I even think of like movies. I don't know if you've seen Instant Family.
I saw the trailer and did a hard pass. I was like,
Yeah.
nope.
It's not a movie I would have chosen, but it's a movie that was playing on my TV and that my husband chose, so I watched it. And yeah, it just shows, it's one of those narratives that shows foster kids as being super problematic with large mental health and other issues and who are always going against the rules and the law and don't want to listen to anybody and do their own thing, which can be true, but also it's like a really strong narrative that is often put on foster children that is, I think, in a negative way. This movie kind of shows that, and the parents are like, we want to adopt these three kids, and so we're going to foster them first and see how things go, and then if it's been a year or if their mother doesn't come forward to be with them, then we'll adopt them or something. I don't remember the exact things, but they do visit like a therapy group, and they also like go like them in court adopting another. But it's more about the parents, like you were saying, it's more about the parents wanting to adopt than it is about the children being adopted and the parents going like, can we send them back? Which is super, because one thing happens, you know, one bad thing happens and they're like, should we consider sending them back? And then a bunch of things happen and they're like, we shouldn't even be considering this as an option. This is not an option. Like, you know, there are children, but it's still a thought that comes up. It is so problematic. And I know we were both aware of everything going on in South Korea with president and all that. But yeah, I just think of those types of movies and I'm like, ugh.
So the name Instant Family, I feel like it's a missed opportunity because I feel like so many adoptive parents really view adoption as sort of an instant family.
Yes, it's the forever family, quote unquote.
Yeah, or just instant in that you just add water, you know, you just,
yeah,
you just do these things mm-hmm. and then you get your baby and then yes. that's, and however you get the water, whether you steal it from someone, whether it, you know, it is what it is. So one of the problematic things I think is really prevalent in mainstream media is, I'm not a former foster youth. I've never been in the foster system to my knowledge, and I would never presume to speak for former foster youth or foster parents. That being said, I feel like the purpose of fostering children is to lead to reunification, is to lead, you are the interim before the foster child is reunited with their parent. And that is the purpose of fostering.
Right.
Fostering is not quote unquote rent to own. I hate that term foster to adopt because it is derivative of rent to own. And that's not what fostering is.
Right.
The goal of fostering a child should always be reunification. And I feel like this movie and many other movies and media really miss that mark.
Yes.
I will also agree that foster children are portrayed often as rebels, you know, as rule breakers, as troublemakers. And they never dive into why foster children may be prone to those behaviors. What are the contributing factors that lead to a child trying to break the rules or trying to rebel or quote unquote being difficult?
Right.
When really they're just trying to reconcile, face, confront, and deal with their pain.
Yes.
It's always, oh, this foster child is just a bad kid. He, she, they needs to find the right parent to tackle all their quote-unquote issues.
Yeah, I think of Anastasia. I think of Meet the Robinsons. Yeah, there's a lot of those tropes for sure.
Wasn't there? I feel like there's a movie and I can't. Problem Child, it's called.
That is a bad title.
I think it's from like the 80s or the early 90s where it's this kid who's been, I think he's in the foster system and he, you know, he creates pranks and he does all these things and creates chaos and he bounces from foster home to foster home. I don't remember like the details of the movie, but it's called Problem Child and it's about a foster child who quote unquote is a problem child. And it's just like, if we categorize a certain population into a box, you know, how hard is it for all the people who identify that way to get out of that box, to be seen as anything else?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I saw a commercial. I want to say it's for LinkedIn. Oh. And yeah, it's for LinkedIn Career Builder or some job site.
Okay.
It starts with this like voiceover of this guy. He's like, you know, I was in the foster care system and then I found myself in jail and I couldn't get a job. And this website helped me get a job. And it's just like, so if you're in the foster system, therefore you'll find yourself in jail. Like, what kind of a message does that send?
Right.
You know, like,
yeah.
Market your app some other way. Please. Toyota, market yourself another way. Like, figure it out.
I was even thinking of musicals. I don't know if you're a musical person.
Oh my gosh.
But like,
I love musicals. Okay.
I love musicals too. I don't know every musical, of course, but
Les Mis,
yes,
another
that's what I was
one
thinking of.
that I
Yes, I was thinking of Les Mis. I was thinking of Annie.
Oh, Annie.
A
Annie.
lot.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, Les Mis actually has, I would say, somewhat of a positive adoption narrative, at least in Cosette's eyes, because she's kind of like the Cinderella. And
Yeah.
then instead of marriage, it's, she finds a single father who has agency, has riches, and can provide her with a way, kind of like Annie, I guess, a way better life. And she grows up as an affluent, young lady. And so
But also doesn't know the truth about where
exactly.
it comes from.
Yeah, she's being lied to. So I guess there's a downside. There always has to be,
And
but
Annie is also being lied to. I mean, I'm thinking of the original movie. I forget. All I know is, oh my God, I can see Miss Hannigan in my mind, and Tim Curry is Rooster. That is the version of Annie that I always defer to. And just how, like, Annie is used multiple times as a vehicle for other people's agendas.
Yes.
Like, she starts out as a vehicle for the PR campaign for the Warbucks person. She's a vehicle for Miss Hannigan getting cheap labor. She's a vehicle for Rooster for extorting money from Mr. Warbucks and stuff like that. So it's never really about Annie. It's just about who is going to be the final, who's going to have final acquisition of Annie. Who's
Yes.
going to final ownership of her? That's really the journey. It's not about her. It's about who
It's about
owns.
everybody else. Yeah.
And
Yeah.
that's really problematic.
So another question that came up, you saying that, does adoption count if you grow up with two parents, but only one of them is your biological parent?
I think many things can be true at the same time. I would never presume to tell someone whether or not they are adopted. And I can only speak for myself in terms of how I identify as an adoptee. I think that there are adoptees out there who maybe only have one biological parent present in their lives and have been adopted by someone else in co-parenting with the biological parent that is present. However, I wouldn't say that that adoption doesn't count, but I would say that that adoptee's experience is drastically different from an adoptee's experience who does not have access to a biological parent.
Okay. I was thinking of tropes where it's like a secret and they had an affair. And so it seems like, this is your father, but I had an affair, but it's a secret. Nobody knows about it except for the mother. It happens in Wicked. If you've ever seen the TV show Runaways, which is a Disney show, it's a bunch of kids who come from affluent families and they all go to this prestigious school together and they all have abilities. And they find out that their parents are part of this, like, I guess evil cult, we can say, where they are sacrificing, where they sacrifice youth for a higher cause, essentially.
Oh, damn.
Yeah,
That
so they
is
all
harsh.
run away.
I
They,
mean, yeah, if I
yeah.
was about to be sacrificed, I would be gone too.
Yeah. And I mean, the kids aren't sacrificed, but like there are other people, usually like homeless youth who are, like, hey, come to our church and we will help you get a better life, but then actually you're sacrificed. So, awful concept, but I just think of that because there is a trope in there where one of the women believes this is her dad, grew up, took care of her, raised her, but then she finds out as an almost adult that actually her mom had an affair with somebody else. And she finds out because she gets these powers that that person has, that biological father has. And so she was like, how do I have these powers? I don't even understand what that means. Well, actually, your biological father is someone else who has magical abilities, and so that's why you have them. And there's another trope of family who adopts I want to say Latinx or Hispanic child into their family, and so they're kind of navigating what it looks like when they have a biological child and an adoptive child living in the same house together. And what that relationship looks like and how they bond as sisters, not being biologically related, and their parents and others. So,
So one thing I think is important that you touched on is the nature of secrecy in adoption. because there are so many secrets at all levels of adoption, whether it's secrets being kept from the adoptee or secrets that are kept from birth parents, you know, secrets kept from adoptive parents and foster parents. There is so much oversight.
Yeah.
In transparency and accuracy in adoption. And, you know, especially late discovery adoptees who have been raised their whole lives to think that they are someone's biological child only to find out that they're not.
Yeah,
you
like know, Hercules. Like,
it's devastating. Mm-hmm. And Hercules seems to get over it really quickly.
Yeah, he doesn't process that at all.
Yeah, he's like, oh, okay, so I'm going to go find my real parents now. And bye. I'm not at all in any sort of way.
Yeah.
I think he actually hugs them before he leaves.
Yeah, and then he's like, I'm
going to Zeus.
Well, they do show at the end that he lives with them, but yeah. it was very problematic when I was like, he's just going to like straight up walk away and leave? Like, what?
And he seems cool. He seems okay.
Yeah, and they seem okay with it too, surprisingly.
Yeah, and I was just like, I remember seeing that and being like, what? Like,
yeah, I think of that. And I also think of Quasimodo, the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
It's been a really long time since I've seen Hunchback of Notre Dame.
I mean, he shows anger, but he gets over it really quickly.
Mm.
It's like, this man killed your mother and then took you and then raised you to believe that you're a monster.
Oh, is that what happens? It's been a really long time. I really only remember like the weird, I guess, religious dude.
Yep.
That's being him. Like mad at Esmeralda for being like so sexual or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just being like, this is like a dark movie.
It's a dark, very sadly realistic type of movie. So Frollo is the white religious man, mm-hmm. and he is killing gypsies. He is chasing this woman down and she's holding something. He's like, what is it? And I gotta, you know, get her and kill whatever it is. And it's a baby and it's Quasimodo. And then he sees, oh, well, he's really deformed. But then he looks around and there's all these statues of God. And he's like, is this my judgment?
Feels,
like,
obligated.
Yeah. So he feels obligated to raise Quasimodo and he names him Quasimodo, which means deformed something. Ugh. And it keeps him in the bell tower to the point that he basically goes deaf and says, you're a monster. Everyone will see you as a monster. That's why you can't leave here. It's like Tangled. You have to stay here and this is your sanctuary and I am saving you. And then he meets Esmeralda and he has sexual mm-hmm. fantasies about her and he lusts after her and he thinks that is her as the devil
coming to tempt him.
Pushing these feelings onto him, feelings that he knows he would never have because he is a righteous man, blah blah blah. And then he goes on to tell her, like, unless you decide to be with me forever, I'm gonna burn you at the stake. Oof. I watched that live as a musical. It was so dark. So in the musical, Quasimodo is Frollo's nephew. So like his brother had a child with a gypsy woman, which is what he says. And so he's like, I cannot accept your relationship and this baby that you're having. But then his brother dies and he loves his brother. And so he's like, I will raise your child because I love you, not this child. Because this child comes from a gypsy woman and I despise gypsies, which I know is not the proper term to use anymore. There's a whole scene where the Esmeralda is usually played by a black woman in the musical form. And so it's this old white man, this really young black woman, and she's imprisoned in his prison. And he comes up to her and is like trying to be handsy with her, saying, if you'll be mine, then I won't, burn you at the stake. And she's like, no. I felt it. The audience was so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I was like, this is a Disney movie, by the way. This is a Disney musical. It's considered Disney. And it's just so uncomfortable. And then, you know, she's saved by two young white men, right? And she falls in love with one of them. And then she's best friends with the other. And in the musical version, he was actually deaf. He was signing and he had one of the gargoyles like verbally say everything for the audience. Which I appreciated because it was a little bit more realistic. You don't see people who identify as deaf in a musical.
Absolutely.
And so that was awesome. But yeah, anyway, so he finds out Frollo killed his mother or took him in and wasn't really his dad. And he gets angry. And I don't even think he pushes them. I think he actually just slips and falls to his death. And then he's fine. It's like him dying just relieved everything and he didn't have to process all of that.
It's interesting because I think a lot of times when we're deceiving people or manipulating people, we always justify it to ourselves and the person who's being manipulated. I'm doing this for your safety.
You which know? Is literally what he says.
Especially with Mother Gothel, like people out there are going to do this to you.
Right.
Like, it's not safe for you to be out there. Or in the case of Frollo, like, people will not understand you. People will not view you in the way I view you. But really, to me, as an adoptee, what that says is, I don't know how to support you. And I am
nor not, do I want to.
Yeah, I'm not willing to do the work to figure out how to support you.
Right.
And I think adoptive parents sometimes do that very same thing. Like, we're not going to talk about this issue because I don't know how to. We're not going to talk about race because I don't know how to be anti-racist, or I don't want to accept the fact that I am benefiting from a system that is built on oppression, you know?
Yeah.
You know, especially this week in recent conversations with transracial adoptees, specifically Asian Pacific Islander transracial adoptees, having to have or not having conversations with their white adoptive parents about the events affecting our community.
Yes. And that's a huge navigating what it means to be Asian, but also to be a transracial adoptee and growing up in maybe a non-Asian household is like a whole other thing to unpack. And right. Like, what does that mean? And I know we're not here to unpack that specifically. But even thinking of the adoption narratives, how many of those are transracial adoption narratives?
Right. Like we were saying earlier, I really think the only transracial adoption narrative that I've really seen has been This Is Us, and Randall being a transracial adoptee. I did stop watching This Is Us, so I'm not really sure how that narrative played out, but I did find myself relating a lot to Randall in his desire to be perfect and his desire to please people, in his drive to present an image of himself that was okay.
Yeah. You
know, that was not traumatized, that was not grieving, that was not in pain, because I felt like I lived very much a huge portion of my life that way. But I don't know how it ended out in recent years.
I haven't seen it. And I also know others that I haven't seen, the two being, I heard Modern Family had the gay couple adopted a Chinese daughter, I heard. I haven't seen it. And then To All the Boys I've Loved, I heard she is adopted. She's a Korean, represented as a Korean adoptee. I don't know how her parents identify.
Okay, so I haven't seen Modern Family, but I have seen To All the Boys. And from what I understand, Lana Condor, who plays the title character in To All the Boys, is an adoptee. However, in the movies, from what I understand, her mother has passed on and her mother was Korean.
Oh, okay.
And her father is white. And the severance, like, that to me is problematic too, especially in the most recent iteration, which is To All the Boys, Always and Forever, I think. I watched 10 minutes of it before I was like, I can't do this. Which is sad to me because I really did love the first two movies. They were highly enjoyable for me, highly entertaining. So from what I gleaned from the first two movies, when Lara Jean, who is the main character, when her mother passed away, her connection, Lara Jean's connection with her Korean culture also died, it seemed like. Like, it seemed like they had a yearly tradition of visiting her mother's family and they dress in hanboks and everything. That's the extent of it, as far as I understood from the movie.
Gotcha.
And then in the first 10 minutes of the new movie, they actually go to Korea and they're doing all this touristy stuff in Korea. Lara Jean has this one moment where she's talking to her boyfriend. She's like, oh, this woman came up to me and started speaking Korean, but I didn't understand her and I felt like it didn't belong. And then they blow past it. That's it. It's over. It's done.
Oh.
And they don't even really acknowledge it. Her boyfriend's like, oh, well, they teach Korean at Stanford, so it's fine. Like, They spend all of like 5 minutes in Korea, I think, before they're back in the United States going about
the rest of the movie. Whatever. Yeah.
And I was just like,
okay.
I have never felt a desire to go to Korea. I feel like Korea, even though it's where I'm from and where I was born, it's not something or someplace that's ever belonged to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine if I was afforded the opportunity to go to Korea, that I would have so many feelings and want to see so many things and want to sit in the feelings that I have of otherism, of not belonging, of trying to figure out and see and bear witness to what my life could have been like.
Yeah.
And I just feel like it was blown past in that movie. Another missed opportunity, you know, to really give Lara Jean another dimension. And I don't know if like maybe they go back to it in the rest of the movie, because I really checked out after that. I was like, I can't watch this. This isn't right for me.
Yeah. I even think of, so I watched Glee all the way to the end.
I did not.
Okay. So at the very end, I think it was the very last episode, or no, actually. So the Asian female character, Tina Cohen Chang.
Yeah.
So when she is graduating high school, they disclose that she's adopted.
What?
Yeah. Because
the last episode?
Well, not the last episode, but when she's graduating high school. So like somewhere in the middle, because they do go on to when they're in college.
Oh my God.
But it was like, way to wait 3-4 seasons and then tell us. And then it never comes up again. She just kind of like intermittently shows up in certain episodes throughout the rest of the series where, yeah, it's just not addressed. And it's because the actress who plays her is a Korean adoptee. It's a Korean transracial adoptee. But yeah, it was just like one moment where she's filling out college admission applications. Her personal statement is about her being adopted. But it's like a 2-second, you know, where the actress gets to, you know, plug herself into the character more. But it does nothing for the story. I just think of something like that.
So late.
That's
so late to introduce that.
Or even, I don't know if you've seen the Harry Potter parody musicals.
Which one?
The last one. The
senior. A Harry Potter musical?
Yeah.
I haven't sat through the whole thing, but I love that song where between Voldemort and Quirrell.
Yeah.
That's a bit that I've seen.
They have 3, and the last one they have mics. So you can hear the quality, the audio quality is so much better. But it was like they were making it as a joke, but it was like at the very end, spoiler, Voldemort and Quirrell decide to be together as a couple. So they're like married.
They have
a Chinese daughter and she's going to Hogwarts. And it's just like, it's either like a trope where you don't acknowledge it at all, or you're adopting into a gay couple specifically.
Yeah.
And if you're adopting into a heterosexual couple, it seems like it's an Asian heterosexual couple. So it's not like, it's not even playing to the transracial trope unless they're gay.
Right.
Which is interesting. And like I was telling you before, the other, I guess, witness that I've seen of interracial adoption is with the Flash TV show on the CW, which is also unique because it's a Black man as a single father adopting a white boy. And not something that you often see by any means. The Black man is a cop and he raises, you know, this white boy, and the white boy ends up being a CSI forensic scientist for the same. So they work together and they solve crimes and other things together. And the Black parent cop named Joe is the first person to know that his white son is the Flash. Mm-hmm. So he's the first person that he tells, you know, saying like, I'm a superhero now. And so they go through this entire journey together. They say, I miss you, I appreciate you, I love you. They kiss each other on the cheek, they hug each other all the time. Like, it's a very unique trope that, one, you don't see of men, and two, you don't see of Black men and Black families and that emergence of that community. I like the series because of the superhero component. Like, I'm in it for the superhero vibe and the idea of men expressing and showing feelings, and Barry Allen being the Flash being a really emotional individual. Like, they say multiple times, you act on your emotions, and as a white heterosexual male, that is not a common trope that I personally see, unless they're like a teenager, which is normal and is valid, which is, and the media doesn't validate it. But it, you know, he's 28, 30, something like that. And I like that. That's something that I really appreciate. I appreciate seeing a man who's not afraid to cry for reasons outside of like a parent dying or like things that are like totally real and not only for extreme reasons. So that's why I watch it. I don't watch it for the adoption trope, but I like that there is one. I can't
And
relate to it, but
like giving voice to that for sure.
yes.
And I feel like that's something that needs to be addressed so much more.
Yeah, because it's always like if we're moving back to Disney, when there is somewhat of like a transracial adoption trope, it's not a transracial, it's a trans species. You know, like Kristoff and the rock trolls, or Tarzan and the gorillas, or even Simba and Timon and Pumbaa. It's different species, so
That
which
we
is an
don't have to have
entirely
a difficult conversation about race.
yes, yeah, and you don't see. At least I can't think of a transracial adoptee narrative in Disney. I can only think of a trans species
Yeah, I could
narrative.
not think of one off the top of my head at all. I think maybe the closest that we could get, not even to transracial, but to like, no, not really. No, I was gonna say something, but now I'm like, no, that doesn't track.
Yeah, I mean, even transracial relationships are rare.
Oh, absolutely.
And whether
Absolutely.
they actually last is like a whole nother.
That's a whole other topic, though.
Yeah.
That's a whole other show.
So I guess a couple of things that I was thinking of that we could also touch on was not only the live action representation in Disney, but also just like if Pixar specifically, because Pixar is part of Disney now, Marvel is part of Disney now, but do they even have adoption or parent separation tropes? Because me thinking, I can only think of Finding Nemo and Finding Dory. And you said it before, where it's like this really dramatic, slow motion reunion. And that's what Finding Dory had. And that's what I was thinking of when you said it. But also, she didn't even remember that she had parents to miss until Finding Dory came and she started to remember more. Finding Nemo, like his mother passed away and all his siblings passed away. But do you ever really see him process that? No, probably not. And so he doesn't, and he's not even seeking like a mother figure or anything. He's fine with his dad, and Dory is like an aunt of sorts. I can't really think of any other Pixar film, and maybe I'm just not thinking broadly enough because I'm not as familiar with every single Pixar film. But it seems like most Pixar films have both parents or
Well,
no parents.
Adoption and parent separation, whether it's through death or some other situation, it's always used as a means to advance the plot and never the center of the plot. So it's always a device used to develop a character or to make certain situations happen. And I think that's part of the problem is that adoption is viewed as sort of like a plot point and not the plot itself. And until we rework our thinking to acknowledge that adoption is its own story, its own journey, and is worthy of representation, I don't know that we're going to see a change in that.
I don't know if you've seen or have read the Aladdin Broadway musical story.
I have not.
Okay. So it's mentioned multiple times that Aladdin's mother had just recently passed away, and her being the only family in his life kind of somewhat maybe moves the rest of the story that the movie did not do, that the
Interesting.
movie was going to do, but decided to do away with. So it's like you meet Aladdin. And he has human friends, and they say, like, look, dude, your mom just passed away, like maybe 2 months ago. And I know you're grieving, I know you're mourning her loss, but we need to move forward. And he says, no, I am not going to be a thief anymore. I'm going to have a clean slate, and I'm going to do only good things from now on for her in her memory. So I'm not going to be a thief. I'm not going to steal things.
Problematic.
And then he ends up doing it anyway. And then Jafar takes him to the Cave of Wonders. He mentions his mom a lot. He's like, oh, my mom told me that if I applied myself, I could do great things, like this Cave of Wonders that acknowledges me as the diamond in the rough, which I never would have thought. And then he wishes to be a prince to, be with Princess Jasmine. And he sings a song called Proud of Your Boy. I'm going to make you proud of me. I'm going to do great things and I'm going to be a better person. Later, when things are falling apart, he changes the words of that same song. And he says, I will make you proud of me, but in a different lens. So he changes it, but he sings this song three times throughout the entire musical, but he uses different words each time he sings it to show the plot moving and to show him changing in his story arc. And he never mentions his mother to anyone else. It's only when he's by himself that he talks about her, but it does happen quite frequently.
Yeah, I think there is something really problematic when adoption is sort of, or adoption related narratives are brought on due to death and, the obligations that we feel to someone's memory, to someone's legacy, and the pressure that we put on ourselves with respect to those expectations or obligations. You know, it just shows erasure of another facet of his identity, which is being a thief or feeling that you need to be someone else. And I think that's something that a lot of adoptees struggle with, feeling to be a specific person, a specific type of person, to present a certain image of yourself. And it seems like it's sort of bypassed here in a really strange way.
Oh, interesting.
Like under the guise of grief.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you say that, because I think when you're looking at it from a surface non-adoption narrative, it would be seen as like a very positive thing where your mother tried to raise you to be a good person and you decided
to not be
and be your own, self. I would say the story arc is him learning what that means, and I will make you proud in my own way, which ends up,
which should also be, I want to make myself proud.
Yeah. I don't think he addresses that part though. And so I think it can mean different things. And also because, that's his biological mother and that's the only family he has. I think it would be different if he had other family members, but because he doesn't know who his father is and he doesn't have any siblings and, like aunts or uncles. Yeah, it's different, I think, for him, but it could have been a completely different way. And the movie shows, he doesn't have family and he seems okay with that. And he seems okay with Boo being his only friend. Okay, so we're going to wrap up because this is going to be a very, very long episode. Do you have any plugs where people can find you? I wanted you to also talk about your book because I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, people can find me on Instagram at TheLJSharks and my website is LJSharks.com. You can find my book, Inconvenient Daughter, through IndieBound, which is IndieBound.org, or at your local independent bookstore.
Awesome. And I will put those in the description and notes for people to find as well. Thank you for coming on. We will definitely have to do a part two of sorts in the future.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. This was so great and so much fun.
Hey everyone, it's me, Katie, again. I hope you like this episode. I included Lauren's Instagram handle and link to her book in the description. Be sure to check it out. If you're looking for a new podcast and want to learn more about diverse adoption stories and narratives, please check out the John Chi Show podcast, spelled JANCHI. Both Lauren and I have been guests on the podcast sharing our adoption stories and experiences. The three hosts are also adoptees, and each episode they have a new guest and share adoptee stories with listeners. They also have a fun segment, Tasting and Reviewing Korean Snacks. If interested, you can find them on most all podcast platforms. If you like the podcast and are on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please leave a rating. I truly value feedback and love any recommendations for future episodes. Do you like episodes with guests? Is there a topic that you haven't heard anywhere else and are looking for a deeper dive on it? You can also DM the podcast on Instagram at WWOFDISVillains or on the website www.wonderfulworldofdisneyvillains.com and let me know what your recommendations are. I'll also include links to both in the description to make it easier. And of course, you can find me, Katie, on my personal Instagram handle at DISVillainsScholar. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.